Good morning. I'm on the pastoral staff. My name's Cor. I work here. And hi to those of you who are over at Hope West, Hope Classic, worshiping over there, ministering over there, serving over there. Know that we are here and we got a little space. It is spring break at Hope Community Church. And so some of the 18 to 22 year old demographic is elsewhere. And it's to your benefit, to your this. You got this week. Maybe only this week, so enjoy it. But hey to you over there. Excited to worship conjointly with you. There was a kind of growing up, I had these moments of clarity about what identifies me as a Shemoleski and why that's different than other people in my friend group. There were certain things. I boil it down to four that I want to share with you. This will have a point, I think. But what was it that identified me as a Shemoleski? Even looking back now, what were those things, four things that identified me as a Shemoleski? We were known, this is like up on me tight here. Can I move this? I don't know. I don't know if I can move this. I like to move around, which move them up, move them forward. I got to come up. You're telling me to come forward. I'm going to fall off the stage, but the equipment is safe. We're going to play the video at all the remaining services, but one of them was that I grew up in a yellow house. That was one of the identifying marks, and you can't see it. This is a Google image of people, and they have, you can't even see it, right? But there's a house there. That's my house, and they've painted it, or I think they went to like a brown vinyl siding. I mean, my house looked like the color of my shirt, like bright yellow. And we were only about a mile away from the middle school, one of the main middle schools within Moundsview. And so many people drove by my house to get to the school. And so there were people, when they came to figure out like, oh, that's your house. Oh, I know your house. You know, people know the yellow house on the way to Chippewa Middle School. So that was one of the identifiers growing up. Another one was that we had a pool. We had an in-ground pool, pretty large pool. Not that we were the only people ever, but it was just something that identified us as, as a Shemoleski. Another one was we always had a basement fridge stocked with pop. Always, right? You grew up with my brother. Pop was always just overflowing, you know? It was a land not of milk and honey, but of Mountain Dew, Dr. Pepper, Cherry Coke. I mean, we just had pop galore, which is a problem of a different kind. But and then the last thing that identifies you as a Shemoleski is people, really, even best friends can't spell your name. Right? I have friends, I don't know if Peter and Liz are here or next door. Like Peter and Liz are some of my dear friends, going on 20 years. And Liz came to me one day and said, I can spell your last name now. And she's just overjoyed. Like, I can spell it. This was a year ago. Like, we had been friends for like 17 years. And she finally figured out it goes C-H-M. Because everybody wants, you know, Shemoleski, just C-H-I. Nope. So that's it. If you want to know what makes up my family history, what identifies me as a Shemoleski, a yellow house with a pool, pop in the fridge, and people can't smell your name. Wow, how exciting, right, to be a Shemoleski? But we are going to today look in the Gospel of Luke, and Jesus is going to go after one of the big things that identifies Old Testament people as a Jewish people. Okay, there are kind of these defining marks and these fence lines of what makes you a Jew versus a non-Jew. Jesus is going to go after one of the big ones this week, and it is going to be highly problematic, highly controversial. If you're new with us, we have, 8, 10, 12 visitors every Sunday, and so if that's you, let me catch you up to speed. We're in the Gospel of Luke. It's in our New Testament. Go to the last quarter of your Bible. That's our New Testament. There were four accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that were written about Jesus' life during his time on earth. The Gospel of Luke is one of them. We're looking kind of in the early chapters of this gospel. And we've already addressed Jesus' main mission, right? The Spirit of the Lord is on me. This is Jesus quoting an Old Testament reference, but he's saying it about himself. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. That's what Jesus came to do, okay? And we have seen account after account, story after story of Jesus reaching out to this kind of demographic, this section of the population. And we have examples, right? I already mentioned the poor, prisoners, blind and oppressed. We have the demoniac, Peter's mother-in-law, sick and diseased. Peter, who describes himself as a sinful one, a man with leprosy, paralyzed man. Levi, who was just lowest of the lowest, right? And the people that are rejecting Jesus and his message are church folk, people like you and me. They're hardened towards his message, hometown buddies, religious leaders. They don't like him. They don't like what he's saying. And in our last couple sermons, we've seen that even intensify with religious leaders. He doesn't just heal the paralyzed man. He actually says, your sins are forgiven. And that the religious leaders say, that's blasphemy. You're calling yourself God. And Jesus says, okay, you follow me, right? And then last week, we looked at Levi, this tax collector. Do you remember this quote? This was utterly amazing because of all the people in Capernaum, Levi was the most publicly unacceptable candidate for discipleship. Jesus sought out the man no one else wanted, the one who some wished would come under God's most severe judgment. You remember that account? Okay? Jesus hangs out with sinners, extortionists, thugs, vermin of society. This is who Jesus hung out with. And the religious leader's like, what are you doing? Why would you love them? Why would you care about them? Why would you invite that type of person to follow you, to have friendship in unity with you? He's the lowest of the low. He's scum. And Jesus is saying, no, I've come to call the unrighteous. It's not the healthy who need a doctor. I come to care for the sick. And he's not saying religious leaders are without sin. He's saying, no, these people, Levi, Peter, and others, they recognize their need for me. I've come for them. And that brings us to this week's message. Hopefully that kind of catches you up if you're new with us. To Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. And if you don't know what Sabbath is, you're going to by the time we get done here. Basically, it's the equivalent of our Sunday. It's like, Sunday, what's that? Church day. You know, get dressed up. Well, not you guys, but other churches. Get dressed up. They put on their Sunday best, right? And they go to church and they make a day of it. Well, Jesus is going to speak to this because it's one of the identifying marks of being a Jewish person. Sabbath is huge. It's critical, and how you actually acknowledge that and celebrate that reflects on kind of that fence line. Are you in or are you out? And Jesus is going to go after that today. And so the big idea in these last three messages, Jesus is still inciting controversy as he clarifies his mission, as he resets those fence line and those parameters, right? Because the Jewish leaders, they have them all set up, and it's very neat and it's very clean, and they have the insiders and the outsiders, right? I think I did that backwards. The insiders and the outsiders, right? So he is going to clarify his mission, and that absolutely drives them crazy. Okay? So the big questions that we're going to see in these 11 verses today are, what is lawful on the Sabbath and what's unlawful? We're going to look at a couple examples. And who gets to decide? Religious leaders answer that one way. Jesus answers it a different way. So let's jump into our passage. You can look on your insert. You should have a sermon insert. Kind of shows you the notes for where I'm going. It'll be on the screen. It's on your phone as well, unless it's a flip phone, then you got nothing, all right? So let's go to chapter 6, verses 1 through 11. I'm going to read through it, make some comments as we go, and then hopefully end by saying, what does this mean for us? Individually, yes, you, as you sit there in the pew, but also us as a church, what does this matter come Monday morning, you know? We want God's word to change our lives. We want to sit under it and feel it. And let it change us, because the last thing I want to do is go through this time of sitting under God's word and be unchanged, right? I think that's one of the indicators that should concern us. If we're coming in and out of church and we're just unchanged, unmoved, we'll get there. All right. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Right there, you might be thinking, I see what's wrong. They're going through people's grain fields stealing stuff. That's not a good thing. You shouldn't do that, right? That's actually permitted. Back then and there, don't try this now, but back then and there, this was permitted. If you go back in our Old Testament to Deuteronomy, it says, if you enter your neighbor's grain field, you may pick kernels with your hands, but you must not put a sickle to their standing grain. So don't bring a basket. Don't bring all your, tools out to clear their field. But you can go through and, this is the Old Testament equivalent of snacks. You can have snack time going through other people's grain fields. Crazy, huh? Different time, different place. Okay, so they're doing this. This actually happened, and the religious leaders catch wind of it. They say, some of the Pharisees ask, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? It's not unlawful, period, but the Pharisees, the religious leaders, have decided, all right, that's not okay on the Sabbath. You got 6 days to get your snacks, but not on the Sabbath day. Okay? Now, I want to pause right here and take 11 sermon slides to talk about Sabbath. Because if we lose the significance in Jewish life that this had, we miss the point. We miss the point of why Jesus is coming against some of the ways that they were understanding Sabbath. Okay? So I need to take 11 slides. That's about like 7 minutes in real time of your life to help you understand Sabbath. Okay? So let me first hit the biblical teaching on this. Two slides on the biblical teaching. Exodus. This is the Ten Commandments. Here's number 4. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Okay? It made the top 10, commandments of God in the Old Testament. Okay? Number 4 is a special day. It's so special that it's actually tied to creation, right? 6 days, he created the heavens and the earth. Seventh day, he rested. Not because he's tired. He takes time, though, to say there's significance. There's significance to my creation. Everything I've made is good, 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 very good. And now there's this day of rest, this day of stopping, this day of actually pausing to give consideration to God, his creation, to life, to relationships. There's this intentional pause within life. We don't understand that, right? In America, we don't have pause. We don't do this well. I'm acknowledging I don't have this. This isn't my natural tendency. I should just pause. I should just reflect. No, it's like go. It's Saturday and Sunday. Okay, go faster. And then now it's Monday. All right, go faster, right? So this is put in there, number 4 in the top 10. Then we fast forward in the book of Exodus to another section here. Look at the significance, all right? Anyone who desecrates the Sabbath is to be put to death. Those who do any work on that day must be cut off from their people. For 6 days' work is to be done, but the seventh day is a day for Sabbath rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day is to be put to death. The Israelites are to observe the Sabbath, celebrating it for the generations to come as a lasting covenant. It will be a sign between me and the Israelites forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Do you hear the significance of this? We got to get this right, because if we don't, why? Severe consequence. So hopefully the significance of this has gone up in your mind. So much so that we read in Joel Green's commentary, the keeping of the Sabbath was a characteristic marker of Jewish identity. They could look at what you did or did not do on the Sabbath and say, are you Jewish or not? They could answer that question. Because if you're doing stuff, that's a good indication you're not a Jew. Right? Why risk it? Why, when that's the consequence, would you risk it? Okay? But if you take the totality of biblical teaching on this, there's still not much there. We gotta clarify. What does it mean to not do anything? I mean, it's in there, right? Don't do any work. But what does that mean? What can I do and not do? And so you have religious leaders that come along and start to add qualifiers to that to help the people understand, to help them to know, can I do this and not this? What can I do? What can I not do? And I actually want to hit on six of these. I grabbed six examples. I grabbed the most humorous ones. Just, I mean, there's some normal ones in there, but we're kind of an abnormal church, so I went with the more humorous ones. Okay, what are the fence lines? What did the religious leader say? That's not okay. Don't do that. All right. Here's six of the examples of how to keep the Sabbath. What you would not do on Sabbath. Number one. No man shall walk after the animal to pasture it outside his city more than 2,000 cubits. Now that's not funny in and of itself because you're like, oh yeah, wow, 2,000 cubits, what's that? 2,000 cubits is about a half a mile, just over a half a mile. So you can't pasture your animal, go take it to some feed, some grass, okay? If it's farther than walking to Bobby and Steve's. That's too far. That's not okay. You can pasture it, you know, as far as the new stadium. Even Maxwell's over there, right, which is just a little bit this side of Bobby and C's, but you can't go any further. That's not okay. That desecrates this holy day. It's like, huh, 0.568 miles. 0.567? I think we're good. 0.568. Once you hit that 2,000th cubit, it's not okay, right? Number two, none shall lift his hand to smite the animal with his fist. So let's say your animal gets out too far in front of you. You got to run to catch up. You can't, like, lift a fist to smite it, right? And this might not, you maybe not ever got pounded, but when you've had, I'm the youngest, you know, I got two older brothers. When they do this, that freaks you out, right? And there's no parameters around doing that to siblings. You can raise your fist to smite a sibling, but the animal is protected under these Sabbath regulations, okay? But that, just that, like, wow, okay? Number three, no one shall carry anything from the house to the outside or from the outside into the house. Whoa! So you imagine, like, I just kind of go to my own world of, like, all right, I got a family, and now the boys, you know, as 9 and 11, they can get here and there on their own, but just when they're in their car seat, you know, it's just like getting ready to go to church, going to go to synagogue, going to celebrate. Like, I can't get that arm under, like, just imagine getting ready to church. I'm going to walk out the door, and my wife says, well, what about our son? It's just like, I can't carry anything, so he's going to have to stay. I'll come back in a little bit, but I can't do it, right? Or if somehow grandmama picked, you know, said child up and got him to synagogue, then it's like, all of a sudden I see him there. It's like, I can't take him home because I'm not supposed to bring stuff back in the house. I'll get him the next day. Right? But this is all. They're trying their best to understand the biblical teaching on Sabbath. Another one. That's not right. We've been having this just a little bit with the PowerPoint. So let me read this one here. None shall open the cover of a vessel that is pasted. So let's say you need something and it's in a pasted vessel. You got any of those lying around home, right? So I just imagine, like, getting that jar and just like that's too much. Don't weary yourself. Don't tire yourself out. You're supposed to be resting, but, you know, not even a flip top. Just kind of a, you know, like, don't do that. Don't do that. So maybe just a couple more here. Is this on there? We jump back. Whoa. It's really confused now. Can you just jump back one slide for me? They're all wrong. They're all of them are wrong? Just in this section. How many slides before I get correct again? All right. Another one, okay? no man shall carry on him spices. So no foodies on the Sabbath. You all keep your spices and your fun foods at home on the Sabbath. Like, huh? Like, how did they get there? How did religious leaders say that's problematic, right? And then this. And this is when you kind of need to see. But if any person falls into a place of water or into a place of, now there's an ellipsis. There's three dots, okay? That person shall not bring him up by a ladder or a cord or an instrument. If any person falls into a place of water, you shouldn't have a friend come and grab you up out of there with a ladder, with a cord, with some sort of instrument, okay? So it's a place of water or into a place of dot, dot, dot. So you're starting to think, well, like, was that like a manure pile or a dung heap or something? And this is just too holy, too religious. And so he kind of went through his mental list of what should I write in there? And I just think I'll just go dot, dot, dot. That pile, which mustn't be named. It's like Voldemort showed up in these ancient writings, right? The dung heap, which cannot be named. It mustn't be named. And these are the religious leaders and what they're trying to communicate you should do or not do in order to acknowledge Sabbath. So moving forward now back into Luke here, Jesus is going to answer them, right? Why are they doing what's unlawful? You can't do this. You can't pick heads of grain on the Sabbath. What are they doing? And Jesus responds, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Okay, so he's referencing 1 Samuel 21, right? In which David was famished. He ends up being kind of in this spot of the tabernacle where there's bread of the presence, it's called. Just 12 loaves of bread that are put before God continually to remind the Israelites, God's provided for you. Like manna, right? And their wanderings, God provided that for them to eat. These loaves of bread remind us of his provision for us. They're only intended to be eaten by the priests. And all of a sudden, David shows up with his guys famished. It's not lawful for them to eat it. But they ate it. Okay? And Jesus is like, don't you remember that? Look what J.A. Brooks says. He says, the consecrated bread was 12 loaves that were eaten only by the priests at the end of the week. David and his men were not priests, but Jesus implied that what they did was justified because they were famished. Jesus set forth the basic principle that human need should take precedence over ceremonial laws. Jesus set forth the basic principle that human need should take precedence over ceremonial laws. Let me say it another way, and I think this is a point of application for us church people. We know how to do church right. We go every Sunday, maybe an ad hour class in a small group. We have our religious activity, right? But what Jesus is trying to highlight here is human concerns come before holy ceremonies. Human concerns come before holy ceremonies. Even more simply, relationships come before rituals. It's not just them back there that have their parameters set up about what's okay and not okay to do on Sabbath. We have this. We set up our rituals and our ceremonies that say, all right, this is spiritual day. This is Sunday. I go to church. No, I stop and get coffee. Then I go to church. Or I stop downstairs and get coffee. I bring it up into church. Okay? Then I do my church thing. Then I hang out with my small group and talk. Then I got my ritual nap. You know, yeah, you know who I'm talking about, right? And if you don't get one of these things, it's like, no, there's just no way to connect with God. There's just no way to make it a special holy day. You have your Sabbath rituals. You have your Sunday routines. And somebody's like, hey, can you pick me up? And you're like, oh, whew. I know we're trying to reach out to college students, but they should get their own wheels. I got a schedule to keep on Sunday morning. I don't know if I can, right? Any difference comes in here and it fringes on that, on your ritual, on your ceremony. Some of you showed up this morning and there was a person sitting where? In your spot. You just about turned around and left, didn't you? You're just like, oh, I don't know if I can stay. What is going on? Hope just ain't the same. What is happening to my church? I used to be able to have my spot. And Jesus sets this whole response up with that, have you not read this? Have you not read what David did? They're religious leaders. They're Pharisees. They know exactly that story. They've read this. They're experts in this, okay? Joel Green says, the use of this formula, this have you not read, suggests that his interlocutors, I looked that up on the Google this morning, right? People engaged in this conversation have read but not understood the real meaning of this story. He, Jesus, not these Pharisees, understands the significance of the scriptures. Accordingly, Jesus' point is that he, like David before him, appears to be breaking the law even while being obedient to God the Father. So how does this section conclude? Very definitively and very controversially with this. Then Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. The Son of Man is a title that references Jesus and connects him to the divine being in the book of Daniel. Okay, so Jesus is saying in a kind of third person manner here, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. I am Lord of the Sabbath. Who gets to decide where those fence line and parameters get set up? What's lawful and unlawful? Jesus says, me. I get to decide that. I am Lord of the Sabbath. I interpret what is lawful and unlawful, appropriate and inappropriate, holy and unholy, I get to decide that. And I'm changing the fence lines and parameters that you've established. He is putting before us and answering these questions, what's lawful? Jesus says, I want to put human concern before holy ceremony. I want to put relationship before ritual. Okay? You and I, right? You and I weren't made for the Sabbath, but what? The Sabbath was made for us. Now, let me update that language and put it into church language. Some of you will come up to me after having gone on spring break or up north to the cabin or away on holiday, right? And you'll come up and just say, I'm so sorry I haven't been here. So we don't take attendance. That's okay, right? This is here for you. You're not here for it, like as if this thing's going to fall apart should you be absent one day. This is here for you. This worship team, they're here for you to serve you, to put you in a better position to connect with God. We're trying to make a conducive environment for you to connect heart to heart with God and with the people of hope, to be encouraged in your faith, to move then out into this world. You're not here for it. We're here for you. This church, this community around you, it's here for you, for your benefit. A pool and pop and a yellow house. That's all present so that I might experience family. I might experience relationship. So how do you even view Sundays? As an obligation? I got to be there. I got to get there. That's legalism. That's religion. Instead of, do you see this as an opportunity to connect with the family of God, to be pointed back toward him, to have our orientation readjusted, to remind ourselves of what's real and true, because we go out into the world and there's a bunch of falsehood. People pointing all over the place about what's real and true and good and life-giving. Then we come back here and we're reminded of God's heart for us and for the world. This is here for you. You're not here for it. Hopefully we're starting to hear what Jesus is trying to do in confronting these religious leaders by confronting us in our own religious activity. Let's keep going. It says, on another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching. And a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. Okay, new account here, different Sabbath. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus. So they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew what they were thinking. and said to the man with the shriveled hand, get up and stand in front of everyone. So he got up and stood there. This is interesting. Just imagine the eyes of the religious leaders kind of turning toward Jesus. What's he going to do? How is he going to respond? And Jesus could just kind of go over, right? Just in a silent moment. Just him and this guy with this kind of paralyzed or atrophied hand. It's just not working, right? He could just kind of put an arm around, right? Instead, he caused that person to come center stage, drawing all attention in the synagogue to this moment, to this person, to what he's about to do. Joel Green says, although the Pharisaic tradition knew of exceptions when the Sabbath could be broken, for example, for life-threatening situations, the healing of a shriveled hand did not qualify as such an exception. Okay? Pharisees, religious leaders saying, oh, you can heal him, just not today, not on the Sabbath. His life isn't threatened. He could have come yesterday. He can come back tomorrow, not today. What is Jesus' response? What does he do? Then Jesus said to them, I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it? Do good or do evil, to save life or destroy it. And I think if you're just reading through, kind of your natural thought is, well, we should do good and we should save life. That's just in a kind of compassionate, this guy has a shriveled hand, let's just help him out. Should just take a moment. So why is that hindering the Pharisees? Why would they not be of that same mindset? And we've already gone back and looked through various laws, right? But let me give you two reasons why they might be thinking not good and not save life, but rather just not healing, okay? I don't think they would say we want to do evil, we want to destroy life, though that's how Jesus is characterizing it. Why is Jesus characterizing it in this manner? Could be two reasons. Let me give you the one that's just kind of like the conjecture. Let me step off stage if I could and just go, I found this interesting in my reading. And then I'll give you the one I think that's a little bit more likely, and I think the one that I'll settle with from up here. So the one that's a little bit less likely yet pretty compelling is we have 400 years between our Old Testament and New Testament, right? And in that season, there was a group called the Maccabeans, or the last name was titled Maccabeus, okay? And they went through this period of just crazy times where they had no more Old Testament prophets. Jesus hadn't come on the scene. It's called the intertestamental period, the 400 years before between our testaments, our two testaments, okay? And in that time, there's all sorts of political upheaval and battles for power and people coming in and sacking Jerusalem and desecrating the temple. And so they believe they're the remnant. They're the chosen ones. They're to isolate themselves and protect themselves, and specifically their holiness. And so they withdraw and find ways to exist and try to maintain some sort of identity. And in that, though, somebody comes to attack them, comes to attack part of that family, and do so on the Sabbath. So they're in position of saying, wait, we're the righteous ones, they're the unrighteous ones, so God is on our side. Additionally, it's the Sabbath. We're called to not do stuff. We're not to, you know, this is not okay, right? They get annihilated. They get taken out. So then the rest of the Maccabeans say, maybe we should amend our Sabbath-keeping rules. And we read this in 1 Maccabees. It says, so they made this decision that day. Let us fight against anyone who comes to attack us on the Sabbath day. Let us not all die as our kindred died in their hiding places. And so Jesus, it's possible. It could be. Jesus comes on the scene just within a couple hundred years of this. And he's saying, wait a second. On the Sabbath, is it okay to celebrate, save, help life, or is it okay to harm and take life? Is he referencing, is it possible that he's referencing the fact that they've taken up arms on the Sabbath day to destroy life, to harm? I'm saying it's possible, okay? What's a safer, a more likely understanding of this? I'm gonna quote Frederick Louis Godeau, I'm guessing, on his commentary of the Gospel of Luke. He says, good omitted is evil committed. You're in the place to help this guy and you're not doing it. And I'm comparing that to actually harming him. I'm comparing that to destroying life. You have the opportunity to do good, to bless, to care for, and you're not. And I'm saying good omitted is evil committed. Those who know the good they should do and don't do it, sin. That's another passage in our Bible. And so Jesus is holding up, again, this idea that human concerns come before holy ceremonies, relationships before rituals, helping before harming, doing good comes before doing any sort of evil, right? And so we see Jesus now carry this out. He looked around at them all, then said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he did so. He's healed. And his hand was completely restored. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were furious, began to discuss with one another what they might do to Jesus. Are you going to help or are you going to harm? Are you going to do good or evil? Are we going to save life or are we going to destroy life? And Jesus says, I want to restore life. I care about this man. I care about his hand, his welfare, his ability to make a living. Are we more concerned about the needs of the people around us or about our holy ceremonies? Do we care about relationships or more about our rituals? We're the church. This is a question I think we need to ask ourselves. What are the fence lines? I am concerned about why you're here this morning. Why you choose to come here. What's on your heart? Because when we talk about Sabbath and we talk about some of these Old Testament rituals, like one of the other identifying marks of being a Jew was circumcision, we get to the New Testament and Paul says circumcision is what? A matter of the heart. Sabbath and upholding this, it's not just coming to a place on a Sunday morning. It's what's going through your heart. Why are you here? Why do you want to participate and have fellowship in church? Is it to check the box? Religious duty? There are people outside these walls that made an intentional decision not to come to a fellowship this morning. That Jesus would say, I celebrate the reason why they didn't go to a Sunday worship service. And he would stand in different people's face and say, why did you come? Did you come for the right reasons? Did you come out of religious duty? Or because you could find help? Did you come with ideas of comparison and, hey, what did that person dress like? And I couldn't even believe what they said there. Is that why you're here? Size yourself up against other people? No, I would never do that. It happens though, right? Rather, are we a people who come in and say, I need life. I need help. I need the church. You're not here for it. It's here for you. The church, the fellowship, the gospel is here for you. Joel Green says, against these Pharisees and scribes, Jesus refuses to represent Sabbath observance as a litmus test for faithfulness to God. More fundamental for him is God's design to save, a purpose that is not incompatible with Sabbath observance, but in fact is embodied in God's purpose for the Sabbath. Okay? So coming to church, that's not inconsistent with God's desires for you. But that's not his only desire for you. It's not even chief amongst his desires for you. He wants to connect with you and you with him. I hope that's why you come on a Sunday. I listed the things that make me a Shemaleski, and I would just say, what makes you a Christian? What makes you a follower of Christ? Many of the things that we would demarcate aren't actually appropriate biblical lines for being a Christian, right? We put out, well, I go to church, I read my Bible, right? If your other classmates or office mates ask you about your faith, well, I go to church, I read my Bible, I pray, I get together with my small group. Why are you a Christian? Well, I call myself a Christian. That's what makes me a Christian, right? In New Testament, it was like other people out there saw the church's connection to Christ and they called them Christian. Now we go around calling ourselves Christian. I'm a Christian. What does that mean? What does that mean to you? Let me try to connect this with the greater New Testament and Bible teaching on Sabbath. Is Sabbath only about Sunday? No. And we see this most clearly in the book of Hebrews. In the book of Hebrews, that author connects Sabbath to a greater rest, an eternal rest in God. Let me read from chapter 4 here. It says, "Therefore, since the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us be careful that none of you be found to have fallen short of it. For we also have had the good news proclaimed to us, just as they did, but the message they heard was of no value to them because they did not share the faith of those who obeyed." What's being said here? Well, we have this Old Testament example. They were led by God out of Egypt through the water, this dramatic salvation and deliverance, okay? And then they disobeyed God. Even though God had provided these amazing miracles, they disobey him. Their hearts are hardened. It says 4 or 5 times in 2 or 3 chapters here, they harden their hearts. They harden their hearts toward God. They harden their hearts like they did in that time, okay? And then this rhetorically asks, who were these people that hardened their hearts? All those that saw God's miracles. They saw them. They observed. They witnessed firsthand God's movement. And they were the ones who hardened their hearts. He's not talking about the Egyptians. He's talking about God's own people. And then again, I come to our church. And I worry about us, that we would harden our hearts toward God. Who would harden their hearts to God? Those who have seen God reaching an underrepresented demographic in the church. 18 to 28-year-olds don't go to church, but somehow they come to Hope, okay? That's a work of God. That's God's grace and provision. We're not that slick. PowerPoint is example number one, right? We just, stuff breaks around here almost every Sunday. So it can't be that. What is it? God's doing something, okay? I'm worried about Hope hardening our hearts. Who is this group that hardened their hearts? Well, when they had no space at the University of Minnesota, they prayed for space. They couldn't outbid the University of Minnesota for any land over there. And so God saw fit to give them Hope West, Hope Classic. Give them a building in downtown Minneapolis. That's a work of God. And this one, Hope East, it's a work of God. We got this at a low cost compared to market value. By God's grace, we're here now rather than this being land being redeveloped. Who were those that hardened their hearts? The ones that see God's provision in buildings. And not just that, in ministry, in baptisms, in leaders being developed, in churches being started. It is so hard to start a church. Steve started Hope. For 3 years, didn't know if Hope was going to make it. For 3 years, you're wondering, is God in this? Is there enough provision for my family, right? In 150 Sundays, you keep showing up, teaching, preaching, people doing ministry, wondering, I don't know if we're going to be around next week. How hard would that be? And by God's grace, we've helped 6, 7, 8 other churches get started. And just hanging out with each of those churches in the last couple weeks, seeing how healthy and God's moving. Like, who were they that hardened their hearts? We have ministry and God's presence and God's grace all around us. I pray that it's not us who are hardening our hearts. Because if we are, if we're hardening our hearts on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, we come through Sunday morning in and out, unchanged, unmoved, don't care. My concern is not just about your Sunday or about Hope Community Church. This says something about God. How we come before him on a Sunday indicates something about God. Circumcision is a matter of the heart about God. Sabbath is a matter of the heart about God. Name the religious activity, small group, your parachurch ministry on campus, you hanging out with your roommates, studying the word, all of that says something about your heart before God. And if we don't take time to acknowledge him, if our hearts aren't moved before him, if we don't melt in his presence, if that's not happening, if we're not able to just take even a moment on a Sunday or a Saturday, I don't care about the day. It's not about the day. It's about the moment, having some time to sit before God, right? God wasn't tired. He could have kept creating. He's strong. He's tough, right? He took a moment to stop. to reflect on all that he had done and all the goodness around him. Do we do that? Do you do that? Do you hold one another accountable to pausing and saying, what a great God we have? If not, I'm concerned about our welfare. Tim Keller says this: slaves didn't have a day off. If you don't rest, you're a slave. I struggle. It comes to the weekend, and I'm just looking at the to-do list, all the stuff I got going around, and even on a Sunday, in and out, stuff to do, right? But this indicates slavery. If we don't have a moment, if we're not able to pause enough to just say, God, where are you at work? God, I just want to celebrate you. I just want to sit with you. You don't have to be this deeply contemplative, cross your legs, hold your hands up to the sky. I'm not looking for a certain way of doing this. I'm just saying, is there a moment, are there a few moments throughout your week where you're able to just escape from everything out there, what's visible and physical, and escape internal? Because what is visible, right, is what? Momentary, but what is unseen and invisible is eternal. Are we able to just pause somewhere, somehow, to experience that Sabbath rest in a small way because we look forward to the eternal rest of God? Do we do that, hope? Because if we can't do it momentarily, I don't know that we're longing for him and his presence and his kingdom to come on earth as it is in heaven. I fear if we're not taking that daily moment to just say, God, where are you at work? What are you doing? God, my heart before you. Augustine says this: you have formed us for yourself, and our hearts are restless till they find rest in you. Will you find rest in God? He's Lord of the Sabbath. He sets up the parameters, right, in the fence lines of Sabbath rest. Will you connect with him? It's not about a day of the week. It's not about a certain discipline. I'm just saying somehow, some way, because it's you, your personality, your life, your lifestyle, your relationships, your work, your classroom, okay? Are you able to find that niche, that spot, that space? Your heart will be restless until it finds rest in God. Will you do that this week? Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. He says, if you're weary, if you're tired, come to me. I'll give you what? Rest. Momentary, temporary, yes, but there's an eternal rest waiting for you. Hope Community, will you be a people that pushes for that amidst what's visible, physical, the challenges, the relationships, the strife, the busyness, the go, go, go? Will you find rest in God? Let's pray together.